The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Wednesday. We're on a Wednesday, obviously, because we're in Cookstown tomorrow night. We're in the Greenvale Hotel in Cookstown. And it starts at 7:30 tomorrow night. Doors open at 7. We have Owen Mulligan, Pillar Caffrey, Brian McGuigan, Conor Gormley, Colin Parkinson. Why the hell is my name written down on that? Barry Cowell and Kevin Nolan. So it's a great lineup. We're going to talk about the Battle of Omagh. We're going to talk a little bit about Tyrone Markey forward, Sean Cavanagh's punditry, and a little bit about the match as well. So you're not going to hear much about Dublin and Tyrone on this podcast, but we're going to cover the other three games a little bit more. Keane is here on a Wednesday. He's been missing in action for the last 2 Mondays, so we can't wait to hear what he thinks of these Super 8s if he's going to go down the road we did. And Conan's here as well. The first place I want to start, lads, just since we talked about Dublin and Tyrone briefly, we're not going to talk about the actual match, but I was reading this and I thought that after the Newbridge thing of the Mayo fans outnumbering the Kildare fans in Newbridge, and that just being completely wrong for a home venue, Dublin are going to outnumber Tyrone and Omagh fans. Right, because there's just some glitch here in the brains of the people making these decisions, because Dublin have 2,500 season ticket holders and they've 1,000 Parnell season ticket holders, so 3,500 altogether, and they think the allocation to Dublin clubs is going to be about 4,000. So I think Tyrone have only 1,500 season ticket holders. So when season ticket holders are looked after, what's left, it looks to me, is split 50-50, which makes no sense for a home venue. And like, Omagh should be rocking with Tyrone fans on Saturday night, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case.
Yeah, it seems a bit strange. I don't really understand. Well, you can partially understand the logic in looking after season ticket holders and whatnot, but yeah, after that, it's a funny one.
Yeah, even season ticket holders, if we want to start making sure that the home team gets the advantage in these Super 8s, season ticket holders should be just irrelevant to this whole thing. Like, I mean, if Dublin have 2,500 and they go to Newbridge, like, I mean, that's half the crowd.
I always thought they were. I thought the season ticket thing was literally just for the league games, and then after that it was...
No, their championship as well. But like, it does say in the terms and conditions, we talked about this with the Newbridge thing, that if the ground isn't big enough to cater for the crowd, then season ticket holders are not guaranteed.
I think in championship, the home team, whoever's hosting the game, should have first say on who is it. So if you want to facilitate whether the away supporters get more of an allocation or not, that should be your prerogative.
I think that should be the Tyrone County Board.
But that's a farcical situation. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to picture it in my own head. Like, if there was a game in Park Tallaght, a massive game like this, Meath home to Dublin, for example, and more Dubs there to meet, waste of time. Like,
waste. It takes like the home. Like, obviously, the majority of the home advantage is your crowd.
Yeah.
Silencing the crowd, getting them behind you, all this kind of thing. This is gone. If it's split 50-50, it's completely gone. And like, I mean, why isn't not the Tyrone County Board going, right, we've got the tickets, we'll give you your 2,500 season ticket holders, and that's all you're getting. So you've got...
I think there's a number of tweaks. I mean, the Super 8s, look, there's been plenty of discussion about it, but there's a lot of things that need to be looked at if it's going to be, it's the format for what, the next 2 seasons after this season,
I think.
So look, there's a number of things that they need to look at to level the playing field and to just bring the supporters to it, and just to tailor it a little bit better, to make it a better event.
It's
not great at the minute,
because everybody has obviously been talking about the provincial winners having to play each other at a neutral venue first, so there's no huge benefit of that. They should be playing, you know, at home, potentially
they should be playing against a team who's after playing 3 or 4 weeks in a row in the qualifiers. Yeah. That's what they deserve. What's the point of winning the provincial
as it stands? Like, look at Monaghan.
Gives you no advantage.
Look at Monaghan. Like, they come through playing three Division 4 teams and just get in to play Kildare. Like, I mean, they should be playing the Kerry, you know what I mean, somewhere, even if it's in neutral in Croke Park, but they absolutely shouldn't be playing each other.
They also avoided Dublin on their way as well. Now they're in the quarter final, the opposite side of Dublin, so that was good for them. I just don't understand the club club. I don't mind season ticket holders being looked after, but why are 4,000 tickets going to clubs then? Like,
it's been split almost like an All-Ireland, which that's the, obviously for an All-Ireland, it's, they're clearly 50-50 split here, yeah. But that's the way the GAA seem to be splitting these Super 8s.
Like, you have another home game.
How many go to sponsors here for the open venue?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're, like, they're 17,500 at Hayley Park, health and safety for these games, so that's a lot of tickets then that are unaccounted for. Yeah. 4,000 going to each of the clubs.
So you've only got 8,500, about 8,500 each, and that Dublin is made up with that, yeah. So it looks like it's split, and that was the thing with same way Newbridge was done. So Mayo season ticket holders, Kildare season ticket holders, the remainder split 50-50. So Mayo did outnumber Kildare there because they had more season ticket holders. It's just bizarre. Just another quick one on Dublin, because we might talk about this the other night. Imagine this stat, it nearly bowled me over. Dublin were turned over 15 times in Donegal, against Donegal, losing the ball in contact nearly twice as many times as Donegal were turned over in contact. It's not a stat that would almost blow your mind. The more I think about it, how Donegal lost or weren't able to beat Dublin, when you see the minus Connolly, you see the minus Brogan, you see Mannion, you see Kilkenny, and you see Conn playing shite, then you have them turning over the ball 15 times in the contact. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, how have Donegal lost that game by the amount they did? We'll talk about them in part three, but Donegal, Dublin playing around with that ball towards the end, and Dublin maybe not firing on all cylinders, has definitely given or got Donegal off the hook, who didn't play, who just weren't at the races against the Dublin team that weren't really at the races either.
Yeah, bad performance from Donegal. I think they went away from a lot of the good things that they did all year. I think they were overawed by it, and I think they played with fear, and that's why they ended up where they ended up. There was no positivity to what they did, and ultimately when you go out and play like that without positivity, you lose. We've seen this year after year. So I mean, they got what they deserved in the end, which was a defeat.
Yeah. And what if, just quickly, we'll do it in the predictions, because I think are Dublin sleepwalking here? Are they there for the taking, or are they just waiting to be challenged? Like,
any sort of a performance from Donegal last weekend would have seen them win the game.
Should have. Getting more ball inside as well.
Or certainly made it a game.
Yeah.
I don't think they're as good, Dublin, as they were, but I still think they're far better than everybody else. And I think all their teams might have gotten worse as well.
They are.
Galway are catching up, but they're not as high as Mayo were. Yeah. Compared to Dublin.
Right, okay, exactly. Well, we'll get into that in part three when we talk do predictions. Colm O'Neill has retired, lads. That was the news that came out yesterday. He's only 29. Pretty sad for Colm O'Neill. And then you say it's pretty sad, and then you see that he's won an All-Star, he's won an All-Ireland, he's won two All-Ireland under 21s. Like, he's had a good innings. It's just how good this fella could have been if he had a stayed injury free, and if Cork hadn't been on pretty much on the slide since he was in 21. You know, he got it all. Sometimes you wonder with fellas' careers, you see some fellas and they do it all at 19, 20, 21, and then it fades away. And then, you know, someone like maybe Colm O'Rourke back in the day just soldiered for so long, and there's lots of examples of this. And then, so like Dennis Bastic, maybe, or you know, one of these, Alan Brogan, losing, and then finished their careers winning All Ireland's. Like, obviously, the latter is a much better way to finish than winning everything as a young fella, thinking the world is your oyster, and then just your career just kind of slips away.
Yeah, well, I think your career is defined by how good your teammates are. I think that's really what you have to look at. You look at the start of Colm O'Neill's senior inter-county career. He's playing on an excellent Cork team. They win All-Ireland, and he hasn't had even remotely close to that level of quality a teammate really since that time period. And he's been quite unfortunate with injury, but even injuries aside, he wouldn't have added to his medal haul even if he was fully fit, because his teammates just weren't up to it around him. It was interesting, I saw him playing against Meath and Navan this year, and I think he kind of always was the real lethal finisher inside forward. I don't think there was even early in his career, there wasn't a huge amount of ball winning or selfless running or any of that sort of thing. He's become, also in fairness, he's
extinct.
Become a bit of a niche player.
Yeah.
In that,
Daniel Goulding was the same couldn't keep up with the modern game.
Yeah, like absolutely excellent, very skillful players, brilliant finishers, lethal finishers when the opportunity is presented to them. They're able to create it with their good movement and their ability to sell dummies and that, but when you don't have a team that can give you any sort of a platform in a game, really there's not a lot guys like him can do. And I think you could put the Gooch into that mark as well. If you're not playing in a good team that don't give you a platform, as an inside forward, you have to hope
you're
gone.
Well. Yeah, and of course, obviously, Cork's style of play didn't really lend itself. There's a lot of hand passing, and like there was one. I think it was when, what's his name? The man, Cuthbert. When Cuthbert was the manager, he kicked the ball an awful lot, and Colm O'Neill was thriving in that kind of environment, and he had a brilliant league. And he's just been riddled, like three cruciates, 2008, 2011, 2013. Then this year he gets back, he tears cartilage in his knee in the win over Tipperary, then gets back and comes on in the Munster final against Kerry and suffers another setback in that. And like today, Colm O'Neill is just like, here, I'm done. How much can you take of that?
It's totally frustrating for him. And really, he came back so many times. And even when he would come in, he'd come in for 20 minutes in a game and he'd always do something.
Yeah,
he'd always make an impact. You'd always watch the game and say, God, if they could just get the ball into his hands a bit more often. Like, he was always capable of creating the space for himself to get the shot away. But it can only be unbelievably frustrating. But he's been, he has proven himself to be a lethal forward of his era, I suppose, in terms of one of the best finishers of his era. And it's sad that he has to finish with injury like that.
Yeah, no, it is. And the other person who retired this week was Barry Moran. Now, Barry Moran 5 years ago might have been news, but he's just gone out of the reckoning so much, and he's just become a bit part player and not really a player at all with Mayo. So it's not huge news. I think he's going travelling and he wants to do a couple of bits and pieces.
It's an interesting one because he always did very well for Mayo, and he was tasked with playing in a wide variety of positions that wouldn't be his natural position. He's obviously a midfielder and a really good midfielder, but
an old school midfielder.
Yeah, like a proper old school midfielder. Yeah. And he was being tasked with, you know, playing fullback or all these sorts of different things.
He played sweeper then too.
He played sweeper in one game in particular, and did very well. So, like, I think he's been probably a very strong member of that Mayo squad as well over the years, and was involved in a lot of their big games, and in fairness to him, always did well. So I don't know whether injuries have played their part, but he seems to have been Rochford maybe just didn't fancy him as much as Moran did. Maybe he just didn't seem to get as much game time, or had to fight a lot harder to get game time under Rochford. But again, it's disappointing to see these players finish out, because you think that they have more time left in them.
Maybe his GPS results weren't up to the like, that's the reality. Like, I wouldn't think he gets around the pitch kind of like Seamus O'Shea or Tom Parsons or these fellas, so I don't know. But he wants to work abroad anyway, so
says a lot about him that he hung around.
He hung around
so
a long time. Yeah, like any of your teams getting to All Ireland finals, you don't like you know, he's leaving when they didn't get to one. So anyways, we'll move on there. Not to completely disagree with your point there, Conor. I'd stay around with Leash not on the... Well, would I?
I was just thinking would Colin Perkins hang around if he wasn't getting as much
if I wasn't getting any game time?
No,
I'd actually be gone. I'd rather enjoy it as a supporter than have that frustration of looking on.
You would have had
bench.
A couple of breaks in between, which would have come back.
I went to America a few times
and then come back when they're getting nowhere near All-Ireland's beyond the team, and that's useless.
Sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, that's true. Right, the CPA have done a survey here, lads, so it was an interesting enough one. Y'all would have got an email from it, and it's very kind of definitive results from the survey. So 96% of respondents to the survey overwhelmingly agreed that there's a disconnect between the GAA hierarchy and its playing members. So that's very interesting. That's an incredible percentage response to a question. Like, I mean, it's very, very rare you'll get something that high. So everybody is in agreement that the GAA hierarchy are kind of disconnected. I saw the CPA tweeted out another kind of tweet about a player whose county board changed the game from 7 to 6:30 the day before the game, right? So he says, right, half an hour might not seem much to you, but there's a lot of fellas work in jobs that are not like really into GAA, and it's difficult enough to get off, and having agreed the times, now you have to go back in the next day and say, well, I need another half an hour. And there seems to be no reason why the players always come last in this. So anyways, you might be wondering what the CPA are doing. I'll get on to that in a second, but two more results of the service. So 53% would like a segmented season with a clear period for club activity, including county players in March, April. That's a little bit like what we have now. So segmented parts of the season, which is just for club, right? Then the other one is a split season. So 63% would like to see the season clearly split between county phase and club phase with county players. That would be my more preferred one, where one ends, the other starts, and you have none of this overlapping. And this April for clubs this year, which really got messy in that county players with professional setups don't want to send their players back for any period of time when it's all scientific now and it's meant to build up to something. They don't want to do it. And then you've got the inter-club rivalries. You could be sending players back and they could have an argument in a match and it's brought back into the squad. It's just, I don't think the mix is better. End one. 63% of respondents agree with that. Now, CPA have been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, so they're trying to get a national fixtures overhaul, right? So in recent weeks they've met with John Horan and Tom Ryan on two occasions to discuss the current club fixtures crisis, right? So they requested that a forum be created in order to review all fixtures and game structures from a blank sheet perspective. They also met with the new CCCC, who are very welcoming indeed, acknowledging that there's a crisis with club fixtures. So that's very positive that the CCCC know there's something going on there. Then he says their request is for an appointment of a select group consisting of experienced people from both inside and outside the GAA with the required skills sets to deal with the matter in hand. We recommend that a maximum of 10 individuals with a strong independent chair. The primary objective would be to put an agreed strategic plan in place for the structure and management of the GAA's national games programme that will bring regularity and certainty to games at all levels. Very positive that they've met with the president and Tom Ryan, and they're not complaining about it not being positive. The CCCC have acknowledged there's an issue. This is all very positive. I think that maybe when these Super 8s end in 3 years, we're going to see, I think everyone's going to be ready at that point. The CPA will have got their point across well enough that there'll be a full overhaul, and it might happen sooner than that.
Yeah, well, I'd like to think it will happen sooner than that. I mean, there's no need to wait. You know, they should just be able to get things sorted quicker than that. There's absolutely no logic to dragging this out any longer than it needs to be dragged out.
The inter-county season needs to be changed for this to be fixed. Everything needs to change.
But it can happen. That's the point. I mean, we can waffle on about all these different things, but they can call a special congress. I'm sure there is a mechanism there that somebody in the GAA can look at their rule book and figure it out. It can't be that complicated. There's plenty of loopholes there for lads to get off suspension, so I'm sure there's a loophole where they can change a few fixtures around.
Funny enough, you mentioned that. I was doing a bit of research into the Battle of Omagh. Everyone that got suspended out of the Battle of Omagh got off. Can you believe that? It got off on a technicality. I was talking to Alan Brogan yesterday. I says, what was the technicality? I can't remember, he said. But we all went. Now, Alan got two yellows, so he was back the next day anyways. But there was like loads. I think there was five from Dublin and four from Tyrone, all up. Suspensions all got off. But anyways, back to the CPA, Conan.
Yeah, like, I don't think the season needs to change. I mean, at the minute you have 19 rounds, so that's including the league final, all the league games, and the preliminary rounds in the championship, Super 8s, all the way to the final. So there's 19 game weeks, say, for league and championship, and it's going across 7 months at the minute, over 7 months. So that, like, the structure or nothing like that even needs to change to sort of help fix fixtures, just condense that a little bit more, and then it'll free up club players a bit more.
We're running into fairly some issues with condensing that even more, though. Like, I mean, if you're knocked out, Monaghan at the end of Super 8 will be on 7 weeks in a row, which is a little bit, there's no real breathing room at all. Now, I do accept that if we get rid of April, that will give that a little bit of breathing room, but if you use April just for breathing room, you're still finished at the end of August, which is not long enough to finish your club season. So it does have to change, you know. I don't think what we have now fits into that time scale.
No, look, they need to come up with a new championship format. It has to be linked back to the league in some way, otherwise the league in itself is a bit pointless. They need to get rid of the provincial system having a link into the All-Ireland series, unless they're going to give the provincial winner a proper advantage.
Get rid of them altogether.
They need to organise things so that there is a hierarchy, and you know, success in one competition is rewarded another by being seeded, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
There's enough brains there. We'd all come up with five different solutions and they'd all seem reasonably plausible for a while. But really the key point is, I'm fed up and tired about the inter-county season, because it's totally irrelevant to the large majority of the playing members in the GAA. Yeah. They need to sort out the club fixtures, the scheduling, and how it's sorted. And in fairness to the CPA, and I would have been, I suppose I'm always a sceptic anyway, whenever there's anything sort of new that comes along, I always like to see some sort of track record or some sort of evidence to suggest that this is going to be any way different. But in fairness to the CPA,
they're not going away,
and I think that they deserve huge credit. So I know they're doing it totally voluntarily, and I think that they're doing a really good job, and hopefully they can see it through to a conclusion, because only for them, nothing will be pushing the GAA.
Oh no, nothing. That's a fact. Only for them, like, we're still just bound, we'll be just rumbling on, and we'll be giving out about stuff, and they're making things happen, and they're saying that they're asked for this select group of 10 people should be set up immediately after this year's All-Ireland Championships have concluded, and would start its work immediately upon appointment. So, like, I mean, geez, if this happens, at least it's a brilliant start. It's a brilliant start, because when they start getting into the meeting and knowing how logically these lads are thinking about everything and how they have their blueprint set out, they have a solution. And I love the fact that one of their championship restructures is my championship restructure. I absolutely love that. And if that's picked, the whole country might as well tune out from this podcast, because I will not.
Well, if Galway win the All-Ireland, then that happens.
Oh my God. Jeez. I'm retiring. Nice. I think I'd be fair enough.
Well, so am I.
I'm running for, get out of here. I'm running for GAA president if both of those things happen. Like, I mean, there's only one man for the job, really. Right, one last one for you, Keane. I don't know if you knew this or not, but I was laughing, and I had it on my sheet 2 weeks ago for the Monday morning, only you got caught up in work, and it was after the Monaghan Laois game in Park Talton. So I'll read this to you. A curious threat was issued by the Park Talton stadium announcer after the round 4 qualifier games last Saturday and Sunday had concluded. Addressing the hordes of supporters, which would be Laois and Monaghan obviously on the field, addressing the hordes of supporters gathered on the pitch, the announcer directed them to get off the field or the sprinklers will be turned on.
Well, isn't that brilliant? Well, that's definitely a false threat, because there are no sprinklers.
I didn't think there would be. No.
Did you fall for it, though?
No, I wasn't actually there, but I was just reading that. I was just thinking, yeah.
No, okay. That's proper order. We've club championship coming up there now, so you lads need to get off that field and reckon it.
It's actually illegal to turn on sprinklers with the hose pipe ban. I presume they're hooked up to hoses as well, so, like, not only is it outrageous.
No, we have our own well there. It's fine.
It's like Inter Milan or Barcelona.
Yeah, Barcelona, Inter Milan, yeah.
When Mourinho ran across the pitch. Proper order for them. Right, we'll be back and we'll get a look at the matches.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Yeah? Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile of...
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
I wasn't sure which one to go with this week. I think Dublin-Tyrone is the big one, and that's why we're obviously in Cookstown tomorrow night. After Kerry's result at the weekend, lads, the big one has to be Monaghan-Kerry. So we're going to focus on that one here for part two, and we'll have a look at the others in part three. So, like, I mean, this is serious, serious stuff for Kerry. Like, I mean, Monaghan in Clonus, they'll have 90% of the support. Kerry have to travel. Monaghan play a defensive system, which Kerry, and not only the defensive system, but a level of intensity that Kerry do not like to play against. That's the reality of it. Kerry like to play the ball through the lines. They like to move it, and they like to give nice ball into full forward line. All those things, defensive systems make the game a bit of a scattery kind of, everybody's everywhere and no one's really sure, and you only kind of reset back for kickouts, and then it's scattered everywhere again. Kerry don't like that kind of a game.
No, they don't. It's the first really big high stakes game of the season where everything's on the line for Kerry. You know, one of the big teams again, you know, aside from the Kildare Mayo game, this is the one that's really, this is the second sort of really big game of the championship season. And it's going to be a very, very difficult game for Kerry. I don't fancy their chances on the basis of their performances so far, and on Monaghan's track record of, I suppose, in Clonus number one, but their ability to be able to dig out these big games in Clonus as well. I mean, they have a fantastic record, and it's going to need to be an exceptional performance, the best performance for, you know, ever from this Kerry team if they're to beat Monaghan.
Yeah, it'll be a coming of age performance, and it's so, I fancy Monaghan personally myself, but I think if Kerry were to win this, and Galway beat Kildare, will then Kerry even would have a chance of topping the group, if depending on what happens between Monaghan and Galway. So, like, I mean, things could go from awful for Kerry to brilliant if they can beat Monaghan, because you would kind of fancy Galway to beat Kildare.
Yeah, well, I think the for that group, in terms of neutral spectators, what we want really is a Kerry win, and, you know, then the other game, the Kildare Galway game, doesn't really matter. But
no,
a win for Kildare in that game would be brilliant as well, because it would leave
everyone on two.
Yeah, everything going into the last game, which would be very interesting. Whereas the scenario that the scenario that I can see happening is Galway beating Kildare and Monaghan beating Kerry, and the last games being dead rubber, which would be very disappointing altogether.
Which would be a disaster for the Super 8s. But, like, I mean, Conan, when you look at it, last year Kerry played Mayo in Croke Park, and they have been so impressive at Munster. And I actually said before this weekend, I don't trust Kerry yet. I tipped them, obviously, to beat Galway, but I said, I don't trust them. And you're proved right when you don't trust Kerry, because they're playing nothing down there. Then they come up to play these intense teams. They're not ready for it. But last year, after the draw with Mayo, you're thinking, right, will Kerry have got the game to bring them up to that level? That Mayo were on the road and they were battle-hardened, and now Kerry come. Kerry were worse in the replay.
Yeah.
Like, there's no guarantees that these lads are going to be able to turn this around in a week.
There's not, and it's interesting you say the words coming of age, because it is high time that some of these players came of age and still.
I know, they've only five new lads who have never.
But like reading Dar O'Shea's column today, and he's talking about, you know, how himself and Paul Galvin and Colin Cooper and Seamus Moynihan, these legends, like, you know, they would stand up in games and take it by the scruff of the neck, and then he's saying Paul Murphy needs to do the same, Moran needs to do the same, and you're like, you know, are they at the Seamus Moynihan level, at the Dar O'Shea level? Like, you know, and if they are going to be talked in those terms, then they need to come of age now in Clonus, when Monaghan are looking again this semi-final of an All-Ireland.
I think he was harsh on David Moran, who always leads Kerry, because you don't lead one day. It's not fair to. I think calling David Moran out on his leadership ability is a low blow. He is a leader for Kerry, and it's very, very rare David Moran doesn't perform for Kerry and doesn't dominate his own sector. Paul Murphy nearly always plays well. I don't know, I know Kerry are disappointed, but to call out their leaders, I think you really need to see them kind of disappearing out of games more than just against Galway. Or maybe they have seen them. I haven't really seen David Moran especially.
No, well, I think what you have to look at is their performances last season in the drawn game against Mayo. Fair enough, they did okay, but in the replay they were totally outclassed and outplayed, and I think that they were really comfortably beaten by Galway at the weekend. I mean, it was much more than a 3-point game. I mean, the consolation goal from Clifford, and really Galway could have won that game by 10 points, and you really wouldn't have said a huge amount other than Galway deserved to win by that much. It's a non-performance from them. What I really can't understand is how Kerry just played. They played with a meekness about them in a lot of the game, where it just wasn't what we were expecting. I think that the real thing that gave people sort of hope and hope for Kerry and thinking that they could challenge Dublin was the high octane style of play that they showed against Cork. That real ferocity and aggression in the tackle high up the pitch, in terms of trying to turn the ball over, and you know, and you sacrifice something in that you do leave your full back line, your half back line, man to man or whatever. But that's the style that you choose, and we thought, okay, this is Fitzmaurice is just going for this now. He's not going to. He understands now that his team are useless when they try to play a sweeper. They're no good. All they do is blunt their attack, and it doesn't actually really improve their defence a huge amount, because they're just not used to playing that way. They're not really that accustomed to doubling up on opposition players and tackling with the ferocity that the likes of Tyrone and Monaghan do, and Dublin do as well. In fairness, when they surround the player. They haven't done that, okay? So for
why didn't they do it? Like, were they afraid of Comer and Burke that they needed Crowley to mark?
I don't understand why they did it, because if the reason that you would play with a sweeper in that, okay, fair enough, you accept that Galway do drop bodies back, so automatically, I would say, you already have a man or two.
Centre back is your
sweeper,
so
you don't actually need to leave a guy stationed back there or somebody who's dropping off. I would be fully in favour of the most dangerous man on any in any game is the man who has the ball. He's the man that needs to be pressed and challenged, not the guy who might get the ball next or the guy after that. The man on the ball.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that everybody runs around like a headless chicken chasing the ball. Like, we all know that that's not what I'm saying. But, I mean, this thing of just dropping off and inviting good players onto you is just bizarre to me. Yeah. I really don't understand how it works, unless that is something that you are working on all the time and that's your specific tactic and it'll bring you to a certain point. But Kerry have not been playing that way.
No.
And any time they have, they've been showing up that they're not able to do it. They're not very good at it, particularly when they play against a good team. So I really can't understand why they didn't back themselves. Now, I think you would have to say that in the middle third of the field, they didn't cover themselves in glory. They weren't really getting a platform from the middle sector of the field. And that maybe caused the game to go a certain way. But it's not going to be any easier when they play against Monaghan.
No, it's going to be the same thing.
I don't see what the difference is going to be in the week.
Like I only wrote on the website last Tuesday about sweepers and the full-time sweeper being completely extinct because there's no need for it. Yeah. You're just losing a man. You can't split the two versus three on the other full forward line, so you're giving up the kick out. When he gives the kick out short, you're a man down, so there's an overlap all the way up the field. Like, I mean, it just makes no sense. And every team is pushing up. Most of them. Leaving back a sweeper and trying to push five versus six up on the kickouts,
yeah.
Sure, you might as well be conceding it. You're wasting your time. You're absolutely wasting your time. If you go everybody, now goalkeepers are trying to be that extra man to come out. So instead of making them bring their goalie out and putting him under pressure, you're actually giving them an extra defender to work the ball out of the field. It makes no sense. And it didn't work with Murphy last year against Mayo. And then they did it with Crowley, and I don't think Crowley's a sweeper even anyways, because I think Crowley's a full-blooded defender. He's not clever kind of sweeper, and I don't think he uses the ball, and he's not going to help you in an offensive capacity when he actually gets the ball. So I'm not even sure what he had going for him as a sweeper. We talked last Thursday that Crowley'd box off on Comer because he'd have the physicality for him, and that Bugley would mark, which he did, Burke, and that Jason Foley would mark Shane Walsh. And then you'd have Gavin White as your attacking option and Murphy as your attacking option. Saying on Monday, Keane, we didn't even see Anthony Gavin White as an attacker because he was man-marking Shane Walsh.
This is why I think that, I genuinely think that Kerry froze a little bit, and you can put it down to youth or inexperience or whatnot.
It's conservative to put your attacking
Kerry didn't
wing.
Kerry, yeah, it is. Now, there were some switches or, you know, man-marking jobs given to players that, in hindsight, when you look at them, you think, oh, that didn't really work. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you're saying, oh, why did they choose him to mark him when you could put a more natural defender on him? But I think the issue mightn't necessarily have been the man-to-man matchups that Fitzmaurice went with. It was actually how the Kerry boys on the day handled that. Like, why did Gavin White now challenge Walsh and drive him back the field? He never did
that on Monday.
Like, it looked like a very, very obvious tactic from Galway to run Clifford back the field, to run Geaney back the field.
Yeah.
You know, to drive them back into their own defence where they're not at their best. And I've spoken about it so many times. I see the likes of Clifford and Geaney going back after them, and I'm just saying, lads, there's actually no point. Why are you wasting your time? Number one, you're going to be too gassed out because it's not what you're used to. Number two, if you're back there, you're not going to really tackle very well. You're probably going to give away a free. It completely disrupts your own team. They're better off letting those lads off. Let them off. We're staying up here, lads. We're Kerry. We're going to back ourselves. We've trust in our own ability. We've trust in you guys back there. You'll deal with what comes at you. And when you get the ball, we're here and we'll be ready to rock. So to me, Kerry lost their nerve a little bit. I don't think they backed themselves. I think they will learn a huge amount from the game. But then again, they should have learned these lessons last year. And I don't know how they can change it around so quickly in a week. Because if you look at the way Monaghan play, Monaghan, I think you've said it before, Monaghan thrive in the chaos of a game like that. Where Ryan Wiley has gone up the field, Drew Wiley is up the field kicking a point. Desi Moan could be anywhere. Vinnie Corey could be anywhere. Fintan Kelly is picked in the forwards, but he's equally as comfortable in the full back line if he has to cover space. Darren Hughes will be dropping back, covering space. He's played in the backs. I marked him in a league game years ago, full back. So The Monaghan guys are very versatile.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very versatile.
They want it. They want
they don't
chaos.
Care.
Yeah,
yeah,
they want chaos.
They don't want to play in a traditional style of game because that's where they can, at times, get exposed. But when it's all over the place and they're running, they're taking Kerry players out of their comfort zone, I think that it's set up for Monaghan to thrive in that. So it's a massive, massive task for Kerry in terms of getting grips, getting a grip on things in the middle of the field, and also just having that communication before the game from management, you know, and in game from players as to how do they hold that shape to make themselves, to suit them, to suit the way that they want to play. I mean, what we have now is a lot of teams trying to sort of play in the same way, but it doesn't suit all teams equally.
No.
Like Galway, it suits Galway the way they play because they have very big, physically strong guys that can play in the defence. They have big men around the middle that can compete.
Crucially,
and they have ferocious pace up front.
And crucially, what they have two wing forwards in Heaney and Brannigan that are as comfortable tracking back and big and strong like Dublin. Dublin's half forward line are. They can do both jobs. Kerry's
Kelly as well, much the same,
as well. And Michael Donoghue, or Micheál Donoghue, came in, or Daly came in the last day, and he's a big physical man who, if he stands you up, you're not getting past him. They have that size. Kerry have none of that. Kevin McCarthy, Sean O'Shea, Stephen O'Brien, Clifford, Geaney, Donoghue, if you drag them back into that middle third, sure, they're sitting ducks.
Yeah, they're lost.
They're lost, and they're not strong, physically big and strong enough to get into that those trenches, nor that's not what they're built for or want to do. So, like, that was the thing with Kerry and Galway and what Monaghan are absolutely going to do. They're going to drag these lads into areas where they're not. They're going to make Kerry lose their traditional shape. And when Kerry get into those kind of dogfights, they have not been able to, against Tyrone, traditionally, they have not been able, when they've dragged out of their beautiful kick passing game and dragged into a trench warfare hand pass and running game, Kerry usually lose those. The only one I can remember them not losing was the All-Ireland against Donegal in 14. Every other high intensity game like that against those kind of northern defensive styles, Kerry lose.
Yeah, it's watching the game last weekend, it was like a bit of a time warp, wasn't it? It reminded me of Monaghan come up against Fermanagh, just doing all the wrong things, being spooked by how the other team were setting up. And the way Kerry played, you were wondering, why are they playing Geaney? Like, what's the point of Geaney making that shit tackle at midfield? Why are they playing James Donoghue running around, half-passing it off, if you were going to end up playing that way? They have a team, they have better forwards than most teams in the country, and they didn't try to use any of them.
But Roscommon picked forwards, and look what happened to them. Like, yeah, unfortunately,
yeah, but I also think Roscommon deviated from what they would ordinarily do as well. I think that they actually, they tried to tailor their game a little bit too much for Tyrone. Like, I know it's easy to say, like, they got absolutely hammered, right? So you look at that and you say, well, they obviously lost belief and heart in what they were doing when the game, you know, the game is only a game for a certain point of it, and then it's just, you know, the scoreline at the end is irrelevant. The game is over after 40 minutes or whatever it is. But what I struggle with these teams is that they're playing a certain way, they want to play a certain way, and then they get to this stage of the competition and they actually are afraid to just back themselves and play their way. They pick the same players, but then they try to get them to do a different job than they have done up to now. It's not going to work. If you're going to go and change your style of play, you change the personnel to suit that style of play.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, Roscommon dropped a lot of lads back, but in fairness, against Armagh, even though it was a high scoring game, it was at it.
Yeah.
They had 12-13 behind the ball at times
as well.
Just the players they get back there are not. This is why Dublin and Galway are so lucky.
They don't track the runners well enough. They're not as disciplined to do it.
They're outworked. They're outworked because forwards are outworked by backs. And every single Tyrone player has the mentality of a back. Every single Galway player has the mentality of a back. Every single Dublin player has the mentality of a defender. Every single Kerry player does not. Every single Roscommon player does not. They're picking forwards with a forwards mentality. And we want you to score, lads. But the evidence is there that that doesn't seem to work against these teams who are machines for work. Every player on the field.
But like, you know, but you said yourself, like, say this Fermanagh system, which is a more extreme, but it's outdated, it's gone. So why can't Kerry just play, like you say, play four forwards up? Play the four forwards up and use them, and then if they have men back, then go into the channel, come back out, keep the ball moving the way Kildare did it against Fermanagh.
Because Galway will drag those four out and they'll just make the game all disorganised.
No, but that's the point I was making.
Do you know what I mean?
That's the point I regularly make
is that if this is the way you want to play, then you do it without compromise in the same way that all these other teams play their way without compromise.
Yeah.
But what the problem that you always have is, and it's an understandable thing in a game, it's a high stakes game. Nobody wants to shirk responsibility for their team. So if you're playing in a certain position, your man goes, you go with him just as a matter of...
But there has to be a reason, Keane, why they're all doing that, though, because we see no exceptions outside of the cribbing well, against Mayo.
There's a copycat scenario. We know that this happens. And look, you have to take it for what it is. Like, at county level, players are such good ball players. If they do get an overlap or a two-man overlap, they invariably will make it count.
That's
in some way.
That's the point I'm going to make. So say you've played two and two, left four up, right? And the two and the half forward line fellas go, right, I'm going to leave them go on. So you know the way teams are so patient on the other side. Two extra players down there will make a difference to get off the shoulder. Like, it will.
They will, but I think that enough times in a game or over the course of a season, you will get... Like, if you get that turnover, it's a goal-scoring opportunity if you have your men in the attack in position. Right, and if you can, like, there's great stories about the AC Milan teams, the Rigo Sacchi era, where he could defend against 11 players with four defenders and his goalkeeper and keep them from scoring. So there's no reason why a properly drilled defensive unit cannot keep a team out.
Covering
there's
the scoring
zone. There's absolutely no reason why they cannot do that.
And the other thing
about
it is...
these teams are training. How many months are they spending on the training field? Like, if they spent a bit more time getting out of the gym and actually coaching their players, positions to pick up and all that sort of stuff, there's no reason why you have to have that many players back if you do it right. I'm not saying that you're going to be able to withstand everything all the time. I'm just saying that on occasions in a game, you have to stick to your own principles if they are your principles. If that's the best players that you have at your disposal and you want to play a certain way, then bloody stick to it and coach to that system.
Yeah, no, I agree what
you're
saying.
It's frustrating to look at. I'm not saying that there's no guarantee of success at any stage, but at least go, this is how we play. We are Kerry, this is how we play, or we are whatever county it is, this is our style of play and we won't compromise.
Yeah.
And at some point in our in time, we will have players that will be good enough to beat everyone else playing this way. You know, instead of this thing of, oh, this is the way that wins now, let's copy this, which is what they're all doing. Only one team wins every year.
Yeah, which Kevin McStay is actually almost alluding to. It's hard to know, Conan. Like, I suppose if you leave four forwards up, drop two midfielders and three wing forwards and your whole half back line and crowd the scoring zone around the D, maybe strategically put them places not, you know, too far out or too far in. I don't know. Like, I mean, we don't really see... You'd love to see just the team leaving four forwards up there, even if there's only one marking the three of them. I don't know whether it'll happen.
Teams will have to leave some defenders. Like, this is what happened to Dublin against Donegal in 2014, and this is what changed Dublin then, when they kept their halfback line, they kept their defence in place and let everybody else. We can't just abandon everybody up the field because you might have a man over, because there are enough bodies there to turn the ball over. Now, I know Donegal had more bodies back and they overran, but if you keep two men forward, three men forward, and there's not enough defenders there to cover them, I agree with Keane, there's going to be too many times in a game where that will get exposed and then the next team won't be so gung-ho.
To my mind, this is all that's going to happen this year. Every team is going to try and get closer and closer to Dublin's style of play, and Dublin will win because it is Dublin's style of play. And everybody...
Well, now Dublin have two styles of play depending on who they play. They were very defensive at times against Donegal.
It's a fluid game. Like, there's no real such thing. Like, we can talk about, you know, the lineup in a programme of the 6-back, 6-4-2. Like, the game is so fluid and people follow the ball and people follow their direct opponent, and the game is very fluid, and Dublin can play with that fluidity. Like, when Dublin press up high on the opposition's kickouts and win it, you know, they're all in their shape or they're pressed very high up the field with, you know, they could have 10 or 11 players pressed up. So the game is very fluid. But Dublin are fitter than everybody else, quicker than everybody else, stronger than everybody else, and better organised than everybody else. So trying to play against Dublin and play it their way is just, to me, what are people thinking? Like, you have to try and do something different. I'm not saying that it's going to work, but Laois try to do something different to suit their play. They're the only team we have seen play any of the top teams this year that have gone with a very, very clear pattern of play that's actually designed to get scores, not designed just to get a load of bodies back and keep the score down.
I agree. I completely agree with that. They're the only team, and we said this about Donegal and Dublin when we saw the chance Brennan had from a Fadden knockdown, and we saw another chance, but we didn't see any pattern of these high balls. No. It was just random. Like, it was like, Jesus, Donegal. Like, there was no obvious. When Laois gave the blueprint, right, Dublin leave 2-on-2, and, like, I mean, get it in. But just on that, when we saw Kerry play Dublin in the league this year, in the first half when it was a contest, we saw a game almost from the 1990s. This was a team playing all their forwards in position. There was no one dragging them out. So I think Dublin, that's Dublin's preferred way to play. And because they blow teams away playing like that, when teams go defensive against them, now Dublin have evolved to the point where if teams go on defensive against us, we'll go defensive against them. We'll bring some men back even ahead of the ball sometimes. We'll hit them on a counter-attack because we've loads of pace. We can beat you that way or we can beat you the other way. So I do think Dublin have, are the one team that have two clear distinct ways of playing depending on who they're playing. Donegal, Tyrone, all these guys, they've only one way of playing. You know, Leash showed this year that they're tactically flexible. They had two ways of playing against Carlow and against Dublin. I don't see enough teams going, right, this works against this team, this might, we can outgun this team, we might not, but it's all so blinkered. We've this game style of play and we're not moving place for a full year. It doesn't matter who we're playing. We could play a Division 4 team, we'll play the same way, we'll blow them away. We could play a Division 1 team and we'll keep the game tight. So it's almost like this game plan is ours, no matter, you know what I mean, no matter what. I just think that's wrong.
The frustrating thing is that Donegal actually had a different way of playing in Ulster and it suited them better, and it suited Murphy and McBrearty better, and they got the most out of them, and then they just, as Keane says, reverted back to being defensive against Dublin.
I think that, look, what happens anyway when you play against a team like Dublin and they're winning possession? They force you back because you're trying to work for team. Yeah. You're trying to get the bloody ball back and you're chasing your tail after them. And ultimately that probably saps your energy. You can't then win your own kick out and you end up penned in your own half. And you can't get your players back up the field because their half back line are pushing you on. You know, your half backs get dropped back. You can't actually get that platform to play the game. Like, that happens, right? We understand that that happens in a game, and sometimes it can happen to a team for 10, 15, 20 minutes in a game where they're just pinned in, they can't get out. But when the game is in a more fluid state, you still need to have players in your forward line. You can't just sacrifice your ability to win the game to try and keep the score down. And I think that either, you know, there's a couple of factors may have happened to Donegal at the weekend. Look, they missed a couple, like that Jamie Brennan chance was a gilt-edged chance. Yeah. I mean, look, that can transform, a goal can transform a game because it gives a team more confidence, it keeps them in the game. You know, there's a wide variety of things that can happen. It gives a team a lift. But I mean, Donegal either lost their nerve, lost confidence in the game, how it was going, expected to lose before the game started maybe, and then they just fell back, they just regressed when they went a couple of scores down and thought, oh, we don't want to get hammered here, or else they just didn't physically have the fitness to compete with Dublin for the game. And it could be, you know, a small little bit of all of those four reasons as to why they weren't able to do it. And look, it was a procession near the end of the game, and you'd like to think, look, Donegal, a different Donegal should turn out against Roscommon this weekend. Roscommon will be playing a much more sort of positive game this weekend, provided their confidence hasn't been completely quashed by this their own game. So it's very, very interesting to see how both managers and both of those teams turn it around this weekend.
Yeah, I'd actually loads more stuff, but we ended up having a chat about how, I think we touched on all teams there in that section.
Even Leash.
We've got Leash back into the mix. Right, we'll do predictions and we might just hit on one or two other points.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge the other night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
All right, Paddy Power predictions, lads. So we're going to start with, let's just start with Monaghan Kerry, and we'll be very, very quick on this, and I'll go first. Monaghan are 21-10 according to Paddy Power. Kerry are 1-2 beyond belief, and the handicap is -3. When you look at Sean O'Shea going up against Vinnie Corey, for example, who Vinnie Corey just manhandles anyone he marks, never mind a young fella of 20-21. Kieran Hughes back from injury can cause all sorts of problems. He's back fully fit by the looks of things. It's whether Donaghy starts or not. Like Tomás O'Shea is saying, play Donaghy in midfield instead of Jack Barry and let him get that bit of aggression back into the team, and that can kind of, you know, transform young lads, because there wasn't any aggression really from Kerry. You know, no boldness or no one really really willing outside of Killian Young, who just did something stupid. Jason Foley against McManus. There's loads of good matchups. It's whether Kerry go, this isn't working, and change it and play a couple of workers and forwards. I think Kerry will go pretty much with the same thing again and go, look, like, these young lads, are you up for this? Are you ready to go or not? But like, a week isn't enough for them to change dramatically. I'm going for Monaghan here, lads, at home with all the support and with a game plan that's just going to mess Kerry's game plan up.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. Will Dunica Walsh get back into the team as one of those kind of grafters in the half forward line? Does he offer them more? Don't know what his fitness levels are like. Yeah, it's an interesting one about Donaghy playing midfield, maybe to give that bit of aggression and give them a platform. Maybe you start with your more experienced players and then bring in youth and pace and energy near the end of the game. Or does a manager stick with his guns and try and bring this potential through? I personally think that you can't always rely. Potential is what it is. Maybe it's a maybe thing. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. If I was Fitzmaurice, I'd be going with the tried and trusted to start the game against Monaghan.
Donaghy and Walsh.
Yeah, to really give them a platform in the game by hook or by crook. Like, even their presence on the field can make a difference. Donaghy's a massive, massive man.
Would, like, Donaghy be running around? Like, Darren Hughes would run him around. I know the other Monaghan fielder who was so good the last day, Kearns, he wouldn't be as mobile, so Donaghy might be. Although he scored 2 points against Kildare.
Well, to be honest, based on James O'Donoghue's form, I'd be dropping him and I'd be putting Donaghy in there, and I'd actually get Donaghy then to go out the field and try and isolate Clifford and Geaney in a 2-man full forward line, with Donaghy maybe drifting in and out, just basically trying to sledge occupy Drew Wiley and try to sledge as many Monaghan lads around the field. Maybe pick up a yellow card, and, you know, then move the thing on with fresh legs. But look, at all of the form line says Monaghan, and their performances all season say Monaghan, so I'd be going for Monaghan.
Yeah, you make a great case actually for your changes. I might change around to that. Quick one word, Conan, very quickly, because we've actually gone to town on this.
Sheesh, on this hogging match. It. I'll do one word. Kerry, I think.
More than one word.
No, well, I think they'll have a meeting this week. The lads will talk about the Cork game, what they did well, which is going man on man, pressing up high. They'll not be happy. They'll have this sort of crisis talk. Monaghan don't really win by more than a point or two anyway, so they're going to be in it no matter what, Kerry, and
yeah,
I think they'll have enough to sort of get over the line.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Enough, are you going for Monaghan here?
No, I said Monaghan as well, but Conan makes Keane some good points.
Me and Keen go for Monaghan and you're going for Kerry. This is a turn up for the books. You won't be allowed back into Ulster, Conan. Right, Kildare Galway, lads. Kildare 9-4, Galway 1-2. Handicap here is 2 points. Kildare and Newbridge, obviously it's a very tight pitch. I'm actually not sure who this will favour. Galway, who like to keep it fairly tight at the back, will it be difficult for Kildare to get that ball to Daniel Flynn, who kind of their game plan is pretty much based around him? When they stopped getting ball to him in the second half against Monaghan, they just looked like they had no real kind of way of playing. Now, having said that, Monaghan were so aggressive in the tackle, and it was a wet day and the ball was popping out, and it was very hard to play good football, which, to be fair, Kildare and Kerry, the two best footballing teams, lost to two teams, I think, which the conditions, you know, probably suited that little bit better on Sunday.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think Kildare are just running out of legs. I think they've had a lot of tough games. They've had to go to the well a lot in those games. You know, Feely having to play most of the game at full forward.
He's a calf injury.
Daniel Flynn has a quad injury as well, which is, he's basically managing game to game.
Isn't that terrible that they can't get a week to clear it? I'd say Feely's calf injury, if he's still playing, it's not that bad. You know, it's there.
Well, he's just not at full tilt, and I think there's probably a number of them like that. I'd expect it to be a fairly dour game, really, because that's what Galway will bring it to, and Galway will win.
Right. I still think that you could bring Feely back out to midfield this weekend, because he'd probably be marking Cook, who doesn't offer anything going forward, and, you know, to aerially challenge him.
It'd be brilliant if Kildare could, you know, had the availability to play their best ring. I just think that it's just the qualifier route has just taken its toll on Kildare a little bit, and I think that the players that they have brought in, the likes of Healy and that, they're not really up to it just yet. They're a bit predictable, taking the ball into contact, you know, which he did even when he came on against Fermanagh. He was on, the game was over for 20 minutes. He overcarried the ball almost every time he got it, even though he ended up with a fluky 1-1. So I don't see Galway slipping up against Kildare. Yeah. They're just so consistent.
And I actually don't see Kildare having the defenders to match up with Comer, Walsh and Burke. Like, I mean, I don't see who. I'm looking to the Kildare.
Burke particularly.
Yeah, Burke. Yeah. I can only see Kelly maybe on him because he'd be small enough. But Burke is such a live wire. I don't see Hyland or O'Grady having the strength for Comer. And there's not one of their defenders fast enough for Shane Walsh. So, like, I mean, unless they want to bring Daniel Flynn back onto Shane Walsh, you know, they don't have good matchups. And then you have Michael Daly, who's obviously back. Owen Doyle's going to drop back off him, which is Kildare's style. Michael Daly is not the type of centre forward, even though he's poor the last day.
You
can't leave him. Can't leave him. So then you're going to have a situation where Doyle's dropping off, Keith Cribbin's trying to get back, or Mulick is trying to get back onto Michael Daly. Then Michael Daly's dropping off the midfielder, whoever were left in midfield, Tomás Flynn or someone. And if Galway have their head screwed on, when Kildare are making all these adjustments to cover for Doyle, Flynn, get to the wing. You know what I mean? Who's Cribbin on as wing back? Kelly. The minute Cribbin leaves you, get into a space where we can get... You know what I mean? You have to be kind of thinking ahead, because Kildare are adjusting their whole team. And I agree, I like what they do, but still there's an opportunity in that transition as they all swap players. There's someone's going to be left free. And if he can make a complete nuisance of himself, you know, you can get some joy there.
Yeah, and I think they will like get that joy. They'll be smart enough to... I've seen a Galway team in the last while anyway as more organised as they are this year. Like, they've been so
consistent. You can trust them now, isn't it? You can trust their performance.
Like, right the way through from February, they've just been absolutely consistent with everything they're doing. They look ready for every single team. They'll never have a better chance now to get to a semi-final, going to Kildare to win a match, and they're in the last four of the All-Ireland. I think this is it. Like, I think your prediction's getting closer.
But when they're getting towards this is it, that's when you often worry about Galway. But like, I mean, I'm at the stage now where we can just stop doubting Galway, that they're bringing a level of intensity to every game. And Comer was on the show not this year, last year, talking about getting that consistency, and like, they finally have it. Like, look at their year. They've been consistently very, very good in every game.
The fact that they lost to Dublin but didn't crumble, it was just consistent again. They just lost a better team.
And even they still have a lot to gain. You know, they have a bit of a point to prove as well, a lot of the Galway players. Like, their performance against Kerry, while a comfortable win, they didn't play well. No. Comer was taken off quite early in the game. I mean, there's a bit of a sting to the ego when these things happen. Like, lads don't like getting taken off, particularly a guy like Comer. So I would expect... Again, if you know, you don't know what way injuries are or niggles, but Galway have had a longer break in the lead up to this, you know, these first couple of quarterfinal games, so that's why I give them huge advantage over Kildare.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. Roscommon, Donegal then. Roscommon are 10-3, Donegal 3-10, and the handicap here is -4. Like, I mean, or I'm going for Galway again. We're all going for Galway against Kildare. It's very hard not to go for Donegal here against Roscommon. Like, I mean, Roscommon are going to be coming up against something similar, while maybe not as lethal on that break with a running game. I still don't see how Roscommon can compete with Donegal based on the evidence of what we've seen last week.
No, and Donegal's platform throughout their Ulster campaign was their success and their strength in the middle third. They were wiped out against Dublin in the same way that they wiped out the likes of Down. So it's interesting, Roscommon, you know, were cleaned in that area by Galway when Galway were able to push up on the kickouts when Compton went off. So it'll be interesting to see whether Compton has the ability against Donegal to keep Roscommon in it around the middle, or will Donegal take over. I tend to think that Donegal will take over in that middle third, and that'll give them the platform to win the game and probably win it reasonably comfortably.
Yeah, I think with Roscommon, they're kind of snookered in that from every kickout, most teams are going back orthodox because the big push up and everything. So if you can go along to midfield, you've got one-on-ones the other side. Roscommon can never go along in their own kick out because they don't have a good midfield. Nor do, like, they're absolute panic. They go short with everyone. So immediately that's they're going short. Donegal will be drifting back ahead of the ball. And every time off their own kick out, instead of getting joy or scores off your kick out, they're faced with a wall and faced with a potential turnover, because they'll be pushing lads up and stuff. So they're snookered unless they can get a midfielder. And even with Kerry, couldn't understand these kick out strategies where they're all going for short ones. I was mentioning this on the show the last day, Keen. Kerry have this huge aggressive push up, right? So they've got this where they bring defenders out of position because they want the other team to kick to midfield because they back their midfield. Yet with their own kick out, when they actually have one on ones potentially the other end, they look for messy kickouts and they don't back their own midfield. There's no logic to this thinking. I honestly, if I was manager of a team with David Moore and Jack Barry in midfield, I'd go long every time.
I would agree with that.
I wouldn't, and Kildare used to do it with Feely and Moolick, and they've gone away from that as well. Get it bloody out there. Get it out there.
Well, I think what it does, particularly when Kerry have an inexperienced goalkeeper in his kind of his first real proper season there, why put him under pressure? The same with Donegal
and
with
Donegal with Patton.
Like,
yeah.
when things aren't going well...
Donegal don't have a great fetch in midfield.
No, well, McFadden's not too bad. Murphy, like, they still have a good bit of size. Langan's a bit... Like, they're big men. I'm not saying they're your standard, you know, brilliant fielders of the ball, but
they can
big
win
size.
Breaks.
Yeah. So I think what you do in a scenario, like, if it's not going well, every team needs to have a default. Lads, if it's not going well, if we're under pressure, this is where it goes. And if that's a long kick out either to a wing or down the middle... Everybody on your team knows this, so it takes complete pressure off the goalkeeper. So there's no such thing as a loose short kick out which gets punished like massively with a score immediately. It goes as far as it can, and your midfielders know where it's going to land.
Yeah.
Your half back, half forward, they can aggressively really go in hard for that break because they know this is where it's dropping, lads. We can go and attack this, and it takes pressure off everybody on the pitch. So
absolutely.
I don't understand why, especially when you're going into these big games. You know, maybe you're behind, you lose a bit of confidence. These couple of default things that teams have make a huge difference because you win the ball, you get possession, you get a bit of confidence again.
Yeah, and we see even the long one. We saw Donegal, they like to do the flick on and running onto it. Get it down there.
Yeah.
Have some game plan based on a long kick out. So your starting point is this is going down the middle or going long to left wing or right wing. Have your midfielders crisscrossing to cause a bit of kind of chaos out there, and then have your wing forward from one side following one midfielder and the other following the other, and they're descending down the break. What's wrong with that? And you're not, this is a low risk strategy. You know what I mean? It's a low risk. You either fetch it or you're getting in under the break, and if you lose the ball, you're losing it in a really low
with
risk area
with your six
area.
Backs in position
and your midfielders easily getting back there as well. I don't get it, and the whole point of me not getting it is the aggressive press asking the other lads to go long. Do you know what I mean? Are you like, if you're so unsure of your midfield that you're going short, then why would you be sending the other midfield? And then they're afraid to kick it long. Everyone's actually afraid to kick it long. So who's got the advantage out there? Like, there's no logic to it.
Like, it's so simple.
It's just
sometimes.
So dumb, isn't that? No?
But there was that that aerial sort of clip of Monaghan against Tyrone, and it looked so fundamental. Like, the ball got kicked out for Monaghan, and you just saw all these blue shirts just gravitating to where it was kicked out, and they always had more men around for the breaks. And teams have sort of gone away from that because we're all trying to figure out how to best
trying to be clever. I think they can be overthinking these kickouts. Oh, look how we've got this move and this move. Whereas, like, an old school tactic of getting lads in under a break.
These goalkeepers need to stop thinking they're footballers and remember they're goalkeepers and kick the bloody ball out.
Stop thinking they're Stephen Cluxton. That's wildfire now. We have to have a lad that specialises in this to a certain point. But if you have a fella like Fergal Byron who can reach the far side 65, that's all right too, no?
You know what I mean? Look, there's different things. I mean, when Paddy O'Rourke was playing in goals for me, then you had Joe Sheridan as your centre half forward. I mean, that was a kick-out strategy.
Straight away.
Because you could land the ball past midfield onto your attacking 45, and you're playing from there, even if you don't win it. Like, even if the opposition win it, they're in their half-back line. You know, it's a long way to go to score.
But like, often old school kickouts used to be your midfielders or your centre forward, that they go wide and the kick out straight down the middle, and your centre forward is often collecting it onto his bloody chest.
Durkins and Murphy, remember that worked a treat for Donegal for ages.
Did like, I mean, I don't see why they don't do that more often. Just, we're going to have one word on this, lads. Tyrone Dublin, because obviously talk about this tomorrow night. Dublin are -4 for me. Dublin are going to beat the -4. I think -4 is very low. Keane, you're making faces.
I don't know about that. Look, maybe it's just because I want the game to be...
That's what it is.
I think I just want a competitive match because of what we saw at the weekend, and I want a quality game.
One goal for Dublin and that handicap's wiped out.
Well, I'm just not convinced with how well Dublin are playing.
Yeah. Like,
that's the thing, and they've played nothing so far. The challenge they got the weekend.
But they'll be highly motivated to prove that they're not a Croke Park team. That's one thing about it. I think this is, while last week the motivation, it should have been high because it was the Ulster champions, but I think against those defensive systems, I think Dublin might be a little bit bored. I think the fact that Tyrone are going so well, this is their first big game outside in the Super 8s. Are Dublin able to win outside Croke Park? Like, I think that's enough motivation for these lads.
Yeah, you would have to say, look, you'd be picking Dublin. I'd go for them. I think they will win. But I think Tyrone will give a good account of themselves.
Yeah, no, I think
they've improved significantly. I just don't think, you know, unfortunately Bradley isn't really back fully fit yet, and we haven't seen much, you know, Lee Brennan at all with injury. So if they had those guys, you might
Lee
give
Brennan's
them a chance
back
to sneak. Is he back
yeah,
fit?
They're both
okay
back fit.
So they haven't just got a lot of game time into them. I'd like to think that both of those guys could make an impact, because I don't see McCallisky making much of an impact against the Dublin full back line. Just with the pace they have, I think he might get a little bit caught there. And that's it. I just don't see how Tyrone have the scoring power in their inside forward line to beat Dublin, and Dublin just won't give them that free running ability that they're so good at. I think Tyrone are really good at it. They'll get scores off it, but they just won't get enough to win the game.
That's the
Dublin
thing. I think Tyrone's huge. They're 9 out of 10 on their running game. They've the second best running game in the country. The problem is Dublin have the best running game in the country. Yeah. So their best quality is taken off them, and Tyrone's kicking game might be a 5 out of 10. Yeah. And that's what they're going to have to be left with. And they don't trust it until they're hammering a team. Do you know, against Cork, we didn't see it until the second half. Against Roscommon, we didn't see it until the second half. So they need to have that kind of, right, we might have this game wrapped up. Now we'll try a few kicks and we'll look good. Dublin, I just can't see it.
Motivation is a worthwhile point that you bring up, because it must be boring sometimes playing for Dublin.
Yeah.
But now it's like they're finally getting a chance, as you say, prove themselves. They'll be well up for this, and they've only played in Ulster once in the championship before. So like, going up to Ulster where you can't win, they'll go up and they will win.
Be interesting. Jim Gavin's rotation policy would be interesting as well. Obviously, he sprung a bit of a surprise with Merchant, Man Mark, and Ryan McHugh the last day. It'd be interesting to see, does he detail anybody to pick up Peter Hart? I know that he's had John Small in the past has been his go-to man for picking up Hart, so it'll be interesting to see whether he details.
Oh, I think they will.
Or Kilkenny's role as well.
Yeah.
In the league, he was full forward, and he was the difference between them on the night. Himself and Fenton were really the difference makers. So will it be the same again?
Yeah, okay. Listen, you could be one thing for sure. Dublin generally get their tactics spot on and their matchup spot on, you have to say, about their management team. Right, next up is Joe from Paddy Power. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much.
So where do we start here, Joe? Like, I mean, the groups are, suppose at least we have teams off the mark on points. So you've the odds on the teams getting out of the groups have all kind of changed.
Yeah, exactly. Both groups are kind of shaping up fairly similar now. So in Group 1, Galway are strong favourites to get out of that group. Obviously,
1-7.
After winning 1-7 at this stage. In Group 2, Dublin are at 1-50. So no real chance of that. Neither of those two are probably not coming out now after winning their kind of supposedly hardest games. And then kind of in the middle, they've got Kerry and Monaghan. Kerry are 4-6 and Monaghan are 8-11. So they're both pretty tight to get out of that group. And obviously it all depends on this weekend really between those two. And then in Tyrone and Donegal, Tyrone are 1-2 to get out, and Donegal are 6-4. So again, very tight, and that'll come down to the last game.
There's great value on Donegal there now, because you would fancy Donegal to beat Roscommon and Dublin to beat Tyrone, and then Tyrone have to travel to Ballybuffet, which is a hard place to go. So, like, I mean, for me, I would be looking at Donegal there at 6-4, saying that's a great bet for them to get out of the group.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, if you're looking for anything with a bit of value as well, given two of the teams in both groups are kind of heavily fancied to come out, Donegal are kind of the one that are definitely standing out there with 6-4, and then Kildare at 8-1 and Roscommon at 14-1 to get out respectively. We're obviously not fancying either of them to come through, although Kildare will have to give it a big shot this weekend now with their home game.
Yeah, exactly. So you have an odds boost on all favourites to win. Now your odds boost is from 14-5 to 3-1, which is the same as last week, and all four favourites are away from home. So you're not giving us much with this 3-1 here, Joe.
No, well, I suppose in fairness, if you get four favourites at 3-1, it's not necessarily too bad in GA world, but at the same time now, all four of those have to travel this weekend to fairly difficult places. I mean, if these were league games and you're only given 3-1, you'd be giving a stink. So it is kind of a strange one, and all of the home teams this weekend across the board are the big outsiders to win. But yeah, we boosted it up just a little late to 3-1 to see Donegal, Dublin, Galway and Kerry to win. As we've spoken about before, you'd expect all of them individually probably to come true, but with all four of them together now, depending on the weather and all the things that can happen in championship football, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I thought Monaghan were very generously priced at 21-10 on with Paddy Power, obviously, on the website, because when we did predictions just there in the last section, both me and Keane Ward fancy Monaghan at 2-1, and Conan went with Kerry. 2-1 on Monaghan at home is a great price.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very big. I think I was just checking them before coming in there, and we're 9-4 in Monaghan at the moment. So
okay, it was yesterday I took these.
Yeah, it's pretty similar, but that is a brilliant price on Monaghan at home, to be honest with you. But I think the fact that Kerry have lost and they're backs against the wall now, you're expecting a big reaction from this weekend coming, and it's purely based on their pedigree and that they get over the line just again and keep their championship hopes alive.
Yeah, and based on the fact that they can't go out, can they?
Well, that's it. Monaghan away is exactly the kind of place where it would happen, because there's just little factors that you're not really used to. There's no Crow Park, there'll be a big crowd there, but it'll be very Monaghan heavy, so we'll just have to see what sort of reaction Kerry come with this weekend now.
Yeah, so you have your usual money back special on first goal scorer.
Yeah, the same again that we have on all the live TV games. So that's all four of the games this weekend. Again, it's the money back if your first goal scorer losing bet scores any time. But we've gone all right the last while. We had Daniel Flynn tipped up last week, and we had Richie Hogan in the hurling, and Conor McDonald got one in as well. So we're going all right there anyway. And it's the same applies again. So if you score any time, you'll get your money back. Kind of a couple ones maybe to look out for this weekend are Peter Hart in the Tyrone Dublin game. Obviously, he's hitting the penalties as well, and you see him arriving from deep late to get on the end of a few moves. He's 12-1 for first goal scorer. And then just in the Monaghan Kerry game, well, it's not first goal scorer, Carl O'Connell to score a goal any time, and Monaghan to win is 18-1, which is fairly long odds for something that's not outside the realms of possibilities. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that's true. And one or two other ones I like before we finish up is, I was going to say this on the show and I never did, is Tyrone half time, Dublin full time. You can imagine Tyrone coming out here at home, all guns blazing, going in at half time, Dublin maybe regrouping and pulling it out of the bag in the second half.
Yeah, well, that's what tends to be the trace in some of Dublin's games like that. They can be slow enough starters and come strong in the second half. And I mean, Tyrone's backs are really up against the wall. They're staring extinction in this year's championship in the face, and they're playing Dublin at home. So you'd have to think they're going to come out all guns blazing, and hopefully at least be getting up by half time. But yeah, I think Dublin likely reel them in eventually, but that could be a good one. And then similarly in the Monaghan Kerry game, Monaghan to be leading at half time and Kerry to win at full time is 4-1 as well. So I mean, there's two games there where you expect the whole teams to come out flying, but maybe the class and quality of Dublin and Kerry to get them just on the line.
Yeah, exactly. Well, according to me and Keane, there'll be no class from Kerry. I think that we're fancying Monaghan at 9-4. You're saying the odds have slightly changed since the last time I looked it up, right? Yeah. Joe, that's brilliant stuff. Thanks very much coming in, and we'll be back on, well, obviously we're going to be in Cookstown in Tyrone tomorrow night, so I want everybody to tune in for that. We'll have the podcast up on Thursday night as soon as we can, and obviously we're back in studio on Monday with a huge review show. Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.